Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down on Almighty Baller Radio. I'm Justin Roma with my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I think we had one of the internet days of the year last night.
we were on cruise control last night.
Like you don't like I like it because sometimes like I think we've all kind of joked about when people are like trying to manufacture ways to make Twitter interesting during the off season, like. Rank your top four mid-level small forwards that make between $9 and $13 million a year, and it's awful.
But here's 50,000 words on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. So like that's awful. But this was just like jokes wrote themselves. We had Ted Cruz watching porno and liking it. We had Sergio Dip. We had. we were able to clown idiots that can't handle a woman's voice on an NFL play-by-play broadcast.
Can we talk about how well Sergio Dib handled that?
Yeah, like, I mean,
he struggled, but you know what? Good for him for owning it right away.
Well, I get really anxious, and like this, and I don't want to like be a buzzkill or anything, but like my grandparents are both immigrants and both second language speakers, and I get really anxious when. Someone's trying to speak a language that's not their own and they're not comfortable, and that clearly is kind of what happened there.
I mean, sometimes I fall apart speaking English on that, on yeah. this. There yeah. you go. See, so, exactly. Just like that. Case in point.
So I got really anxious. I was like, oh no, is this guy mortified and is everyone going to be making fun of him? And he was just trying his best. Like, I didn't have as much fun with everyone about it instantly because I just kind of like a trigger for me. But then
he owned it
and clearly had fun, like Google the picture of how to deal with fame. So yeah, I like that a lot. It was just a really fun day. I mean, I don't know if you saw the Ted Cruz, his staff says someone posted a pornographic video to his Twitter account, which showed that it liked it, which just a real fundamental misunderstanding about how Twitter works.
I really hope, I forget who tweeted it, but I really hope that he went and Googled sexual Twitter accounts.
Yeah, I think it was Dragonfly Jones, our boy.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, but like the thing is, I do like that it was sexual, two L's, Twitter accounts, because clearly sexual vids had already been taken. They're owning it. I went to their page this morning.
He caught too many L's, not just two.
Don't worry about it. And they've already updated their bio to be like, follow us to see the kind of porn that Ted Cruz watches.
That's not really a draw for me, if I'm being honest.
No, but I'm proud of them for owning it, for getting it, for leaning in. Because, I mean, that's like, this is an account that is suddenly so relevant. Like, the person who runs that account is probably such a piece of shit. And he has all this responsibility now.
You know what? It's good to own it, though. Like, whether it be Sergio, whether you be sexual, whatever it is, own it. The Cavs did not own Isaiah Thomas's hip injury in their press conference, but we will.
No, they did not.
We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, so Kobe Altman was like, we're not going to talk about it, and that was it.
I mean, realistically, what's the point of holding a press conference if you're not going to talk about the only thing anyone wants to talk about? Like, every single beat reporter in person there just looks so agitated that no new information was coming out. And now I'm starting to think we're not going to hear a timeline or any information until, like, December. That's what I have in my mind right now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really interesting situation right now because, like, on one hand, if they don't really know, there's no value in speculating. And I get why you want to control the narrative, because this is supposed to be a celebration, right?
Right, but at the same time, you don't even need to necessarily hold a press conference, and it felt like they were doing it just to kind of grandstand and be like, no, we have Isaiah Thomas's back. We believe in him. It seems so forced.
Yeah, but I mean, not to be too difficult here, but isn't that just kind of what you do when you have two high-profile additions? You hold a press conference for them, even if you don't, those press conferences are all about controlling the message, right?
Right.
For the most part, they're very highly crafted. And, Celtics did the same thing with Kyrie. No real new information came out of that other than the fact that he and LeBron hadn't talked.
I feel like I have the right to make fun of it.
Of course. How funny is it that that just became the Kyrie Irving press conference? Like, Gordon Hayward was sitting right there.
And no one
gives a shit anymore.
Yeah, I know advanced stats Twitter is like, well, actually, Gordon Hayward is the face of the franchise. That's not how it works. It just isn't. One thing I'll say about the press conference, though, is Isaiah Thomas, at least in terms of what he says and how he handles press conferences, is much more likable than Kyrie. I don't necessarily know if I'm there personality wise overall, but at least he's not so abstract and out there. He didn't seem like he had smoked three bowls before going up onto the press conference.
Yeah, he clearly you read his Players Tribune piece, you hear the things he's saying, and he seems fairly genuine. I'm a little more anxious about his fit in the locker room when it ultimately comes down to it, because he has bristled with places. I know the Celtics
That's legitimate.
That he wasn't super well liked in the locker room,
but there was some talk of that before.
Rumors, and he definitely had a reputation in the Kings locker room. Definitely had a reputation in the Suns locker room, even though that is probably more the Suns' fault than his. But nonetheless, and then you have this. What does make me feel slightly better about his personality is that you had guys like Sullinger and guys like Olynyk really come out hard against those reports.
Yeah, but those guys also haven't been with the team in a year and a half.
Olynyk was.
But Sullinger and it seemed like it was all former teammates from a while before. Even Evan Turner came out. And it's you haven't been there for the last 2 years.
Yeah, but still, first off, Evan Turner was only not there one for the last year.
Sullinger.
When his star turn really came, and I get that. But Olynyk was. And Basically, this guy can't be that big of a piece of shit if he's got guys if it's in doubt when someone might be a jerk.
Canadians will defend anybody. I'll defend you, and you're a piece of shit.
Ah, thanks. yeah, I don't know. Just to me, I just think this is at least a decent indicator. People don't go out of their way to defend someone who doesn't deserve it for the most part. And mm-hmm. I thought that was encouraging. With regards to his personality concerns. And yeah, it's really an interesting thing with Thomas, right? Because if he's not there or valuable, the trade looks a lot worse, right?
Right.
But also, ultimately, we know that he probably can't help that much against the Warriors. So what's the point?
Yeah,
I'm just trying to make sense of everything now that it's all settled.
I got some pushback for tweeting this out the other day, but it's funny because he legitimately is that good. He deserved to be top five in MVP rankings last season. He was absolutely phenomenal. He was more efficient than Kyrie on a higher volume.
Best player on the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
Right. He is legitimately that good. But at the same time, you probably can get through the East without him. And even if he is 100%, he hasn't proven that he can be effective against the Warriors on either end at this point. Not to say that necessarily won't change, but I don't think he's going to be a big enough difference maker where you say, okay, because of him, the Cavs have a legitimate chance. Maybe the Cavs make other moves to put themselves in that position, but I don't know necessarily if his presence is going to be the reason for that. And what makes me nervous is, sure, maybe things are going to change playing alongside LeBron rather than being the number one guy. But at the same time, you're taking a bit of a gamble because he's going to be out for an extended period of time throughout the regular season. You might not even really get a chance to see him in the regular season against the Warriors. So when he hasn't proven that he can be effective against the Warriors, and you're in the last year of LeBron's contract here, are you able to really take that risk? Do you have to make other moves? That's the part that makes me nervous, because it's almost like, as good as he is, he's irrelevant to the outcome of this season for the Cavs, because they can make the finals without him, and even if he is healthy, he's not necessarily going to change things against the Warriors.
Well, I think you've kind of stumbled on to an interesting philosophical discussion, and this is one that's been had, is if the Cavs are going to get to the finals anyway, should they carry a single player that doesn't help them against the Warriors?
Right.
And I still think they should. And maybe I'm here's wrong the biggest, here.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
I just think when you go crazy and like dump every single player that's not perfect against one team, like you're just playing with fire, especially like maybe I'm dumb, but if you'll recall, the Bulls were up 2-1 on the Cavs. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago. They were up 2-1 when it was LeBron and the skeleton crew. Now, in fairness, that is different because they were playing worse players because their better players were injured, and it wasn't just a fit issue.
Right, but like, and JR was suspended for punching Jay Crowder in the face.
But the point is, it does matter to have the best team you can put out there. And like, if you're just building around the Warriors, maybe you're not putting your best team out there, and maybe your degree of difficulty is higher. The Celtics and Bucks are coming. They're getting better. You can't really afford just to get worse and be sure you're getting past them.
Yeah, there's certainly no guarantee that you would get by them without Isaiah Thomas. And I think the other important thing to note, to be fair to him, is without Isaiah Thomas for the regular season or a large portion of the regular season, that's going to increase the wear and tear on this roster. And we've seen Kevin Love get exhausted when carrying a bigger load in the past. We don't know how healthy Derrick Rose is going to be. LeBron's another year older. So it's not like he doesn't bring a lot of value, because he can, you know, he can carry a massive, massive portion of the usage for this team. So having him there is going to help. I'm just saying it really makes me nervous when he hasn't proven that against the Warriors, and we don't even know if he's going to be able to get to 100% this season. Because injuries like that, like if you look at the history, guys like Wilson Chandler, him coming back this season isn't necessarily a guarantee, or at least for the long term. He may come back for a few games and still not physically be right and get shut down. And to me, that's the part that is terrifying as a Cavs fan.
Yeah, it's weird the way this trade feels, and you know, I guess that's what makes it so interesting, is that it engenders all these different reactions. Like, okay, first we have to deal with Kyrie's gone. Okay, so that was interesting. I had to figure that out. Okay, now they've traded for the Brooklyn pick, but are they going to keep it? Or is that the smart thing to do? Should they flip it, even if it's not for the best value, just to keep LeBron happy? Is Thomas going to be able to play? Like, we just have all these things going on. And, I mean, I wonder if, and this is a question that I'd probably just need your help to answer, does the Thomas, like, if you're not sure Thomas is going to be able to help a ton this year, are you more willing to trade that Brooklyn pick for a package that's not as inspiring, just in hopes of keeping LeBron happy? Like, if you just don't think Thomas is going to help this year, and that was like a big part of like why this trade felt good for us, I think it's fair to say, is like, oh, they could be better this year than they were last year if everyone's healthy.
Here's the thing. I think as a fan at this point, like I've been through enough where I think I just protect myself from getting too invested in things I know aren't for sure. Like, I'm having trouble getting too excited about Isaiah Thomas just because there's so much uncertainty around his hip. If he was 100% right now, like I'd be ready to find out what he can do. I have trouble getting excited about moving the Brooklyn pick because I just don't think there's a realistic possibility that the Cavs move it. Like, I don't think Dan Gilbert ultimately trusts LeBron enough to move that pick.
And Which is fair.
And I think the value from what we've heard is high enough that I just don't think a player of the caliber they would want for that pick is going to be available. I know DeMarcus Cousins gets brought up a lot, and the Cavs have had trade talks for Cousins in the past and ultimately decided not to go that route. I think if they wanted him, they would have moved Love for him back when he was in Sacramento. For whatever reason, I just don't see the Cavs going that route, and I don't think there's a dynamic wing option that's available unless something unforeseen happens in OKC. I'm not moving the Brooklyn pick for Melo. But yeah,
I still don't get why that's been the Cavs moving their 2018 pick for him has kind of just not that noise has died.
I think they're really holding out hope that he eventually accepts Portland on his list.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think if you're New York, you can probably afford just to play chicken. Like, yeah. Who gives a shit? You're a dumpster fire anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've like, got Zinger they'll win on more games. Restricted free agency, so that doesn't really matter.
I mean, with Melo, they probably make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and like because they're so... Nah, I don't know about that. But their point guard situation is a disaster unless Frank is really good. But my point is their cap sheet's a disaster with or without Melo. So it's not like cutting him like opens up this great opportunity. So that's why I just don't think a buyout's happening. So yeah, they can afford to wait and say, all right, you do what you, if you're going to only accept teams trades to, you know, Cleveland or Houston, then you're just not getting traded, pal.
Yeah. I mean, being able to include their own first round pick basically means that the Cavs can outbid any offer Houston can come up with on their own.
Yep.
It seems like they're still looking to engage other teams. There was a rumor about them engaging Milwaukee about Jabari Parker to help facilitate the deal. But it just seems like that option has kind of been exhausted. So the Cavs can beat any Houston offer, but the only reason the Cavs would get Melo in that trade is basically him keeping the teams to just Cleveland and Houston, and the Knicks saying we can no longer have Carmelo on this team.
If that's the price, do you still want Melo on this team given
the
heavy group of wings that is already playing?
Yes, absolutely. I think Melo being on this team also makes it easier to make a tough decision at the point guard position and make a move for a more defensive-minded point guard because now you do have enough offense between Carmelo, LeBron, and Kevin Love.
Yep, I think that's fair. And I think it's an interesting question, though, because now you have five guys between LeBron, Melo, Crowder, Love, Tristan, that are all really going to need minutes and really all should be playing the 3, 4, or 5.
Right.
And you
the
have
front
a glut
court
there.
Gets crowded.
But I mean, to me, I don't think that's a problem in the regular season. You just, you know, you slot guys in weird spots and say, screw it. But like in the postseason, I think what's nice about that is you can kind of do that thing. And I've talked about this a lot where Lou doesn't have to play anyone. He can just play the ones who are helping.
And I think there's a, at least with the guys that are on the team right now, like I think Kevin Love has kind of accepted, hey, I'll play whatever minutes I need to against this team and I'll play hard in those minutes. Like I think he's made that mental adjustment.
And I'll kill teams that I'm a good matchup against.
Right. And Tristan Thompson, we know, can accept a smaller role and be effective. So I don't necessarily think that's a huge problem. I would assume Jay Crowder is a similar mindset. That's kind of what he's shown in the past. And I think as long as you're up front with him, it's not going to be an issue. But I think it is something that the Cavs would be able to figure out and just play whatever matchup is best for them.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Or you could just go really big. Like LeBron could play point guard.
I'm not really all that opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it, really. And I just think, yeah, this team just could have a lot of options. And I think that's what I still like about the trade, is that this team went from, and no, not to crap on Griff or anything, because I thought he did an amazing job as the GM, built a title winning roster, but it felt so squeezed.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it feels like they have a lot of options and a lot of choices they can make. And, you know, that's kind of scary because it's a GM we don't really know yet.
It's kind of amazing. Like, Chris Grant did a good job in asset accumulation and didn't necessarily use those well, but it put Griffin in a good position. Griffin did a great job. And then it seems like Kobe Altman is doing a very good job as well. And it's just funny for the amount of dysfunction the front office has had that they've managed to operate in a way that has been beneficial to the team.
Like, yeah, they're just like stumbling into success.
Right.
Which is why you need a good infrastructure, because eventually you're going to stop stumbling into success and you're going to hire bad people. But as of now, I think Altman's earned a little bit of the benefit of the doubt.
Absolutely.
By the way, reading that Players Tribune piece, did you feel a little guilty for suggesting that the Cavs should trade him again?
like, a little bit.
Just like, wants someone to love him.
The human aspect of Isaiah Thomas, like, it's hard to not root for the guy. Let's be honest. The best case scenario would be that I am wrong. And I'm not necessarily saying he won't be effective. All I've really said is that he hasn't been effective in the past. And I have reasons for concern that that won't change moving forward. Obviously, the best case scenario is that that changes and Isaiah Thomas is able to play at a high level and is able to be a net positive against the Warriors. That would be a lot simpler because he's the best player that we got back in that deal. And I mean, him being able to contribute at that level would make this trade a slam dunk. Like, yeah, to be able to add all of that depth along with Isaiah Thomas, along with the Brooklyn pick, it would be huge. There was definitely some guilt as I read that. But, I mean, you kind of have to separate the human aspect from it to some extent when you're trying to break it down.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's nice about what we get to do is we get to have that kind of impersonal element where Danny Ainge has to make that trade call, you know?
Yeah.
Kobe Altman has to make that trade call. And it's not an easy job. And like, it's something I would have a really, really hard time with if anyone ever made the enormous mistake of letting me run their personnel and their team. But yeah, it's just really interesting. You look at the potential deals out there, and it's funny, if you do find a move for Isaiah for a more defensive-minded, less volume-scoring point guard, you do have to go find a volume scorer. Like, I think if you trade Thomas, all of a sudden you really do need Melo.
Yeah. Yeah, you would need to...
Like, I will die on the hill. Like, people that tell me Melo would not help against the Warriors are just really misunderstanding how hard it is to score against the Warriors.
He's also a really good player. Like, yeah. I know he's not Carmelo anymore, and we've kind of overanalyzed him, but he's still a hell of a player. And alongside LeBron, like, I'm really interested to see what he would look like in a good situation this year. And I hope for his sake he ends up in there. You talk about a likable guy overall.
Yeah. I like Melo.
Yeah, like, there's not a lot of bad things you can say about him. So I hope that happens. It would be a lot of fun to see him on the Cavs. Let's get one thing out of the way. The Cavs should not trade Isaiah Thomas just for the sake of trading him. Unless it's like you would need, if you're trading offense for defense, you would need an elite defensive point guard. You don't need like a Matthew Dellavedova where it's, oh, this guy tries really hard on defense.
No, you need like a Pat Bev or even like a Malcolm Brogdon who could become an elite defensive point guard.
Right. Like you need a really high-end player on that end that has length, that is able to switch against the Warriors. Because as many issues as there is with Isaiah Thomas against the Warriors, he is still an incredibly talented player, and you can't afford to lose that upside without covering it with supplemental moves.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how he... I mean, I think defensively, we can all just agree it's going to be a disaster against them. But offensively, I know you did a deep dive on this for Fear the Sword, and everyone should really check it out because it's some of the best writing I've seen done about this, and it hasn't been covered enough, in my opinion. The Warriors. And you kind of covered that his offense wasn't as great as you'd hope either against that team. I do expect that to change in a larger sample and playing alongside LeBron. Is that fair?
I think it's fair to some extent, but if we look at how the Warriors covered Kyrie, if they do that against Isaiah Thomas, what they did against Isaiah Thomas in the regular season, and I went back and watched it, was very similar to what they did against Kyrie. They trap a lot on the perimeter. They really, really attacked him at the point of attack, and the length of both Steph Curry and Klay Thompson really affected Isaiah, or when Draymond would switch onto him, that's another situation. And it really limited his ability to get into the lane. It limited his ability to find the open man and to shoot. Because the Warriors can defend LeBron one-on-one with Kevin Durant or Draymond Green if need be. So it's not like LeBron is drawing those double teams and getting guys open. That's not how the Warriors defense operates. They accept that LeBron can get his, and if they can limit everybody else, then they're happy. So I don't know necessarily if Isaiah Thomas is going to be getting all these open looks against the Warriors just by playing alongside LeBron. It may make things a little bit easier, but the fact is that the Warriors did a good job against Isaiah Thomas, both limiting where he got his shots. They prevented him from getting to the free throw line. His free throw rate went way down against the Warriors, and he hasn't shot well. So, I mean, I just don't know how much it's going to change. And as I said, if we knew how long Isaiah Thomas was out, if he had a couple opportunities to play against the Warriors in the regular season, that might make me feel a little bit better. But if we're going in completely blind and we don't know what percentage Thomas is even going to be at, that starts to make me nervous.
I will say, we are dealing with a two-game sample size here.
No, I went back. Multiple years. It was a seven-game sample size.
Okay. Never mind. I don't know. I do think that some of those hard traps, they are mitigated by saying, oh, LeBron, you're going to screen for him. Because you can't trap Thomas with LeBron as the screener because he can slip and...
And he's terrifying.
You get a free roll on a 4-on-3 if you do that. So I think that's probably the way you get around those hard traps. It's still going to be a lot harder if you try to run Tristan. But I think that will be what they do is they'll say whoever they'll try to get Curry switched on to Thomas and then try to get LeBron screening for Thomas. But it's going to be tough. I mean, but that's not different from anyone, though. Like, it's really tough to score on the Warriors. They're unbelievably good at that, at what they do.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about defending against the Warriors, but they're also the league's, like, they're a top two defense. Like,
yeah, that's
they're
what
very,
drives
very
me,
long.
That's what drives me nuts. And I think at their best, there's literally nobody better. I think at their best, I'd rather play any other defense.
I agree.
I've ever seen, probably. Maybe the Pistons, the 2003-2004 Pistons. Like,
well, one of the most depressing things about last year's finals was you could tell as soon as game one started, you're like, oh, crap, the Warriors had another gear. We didn't see it in the Western Conference playoffs. The Warriors have another gear on both ends.
Yeah, especially on defense, man.
And that was typically a Cavs trade, and you're like, okay, well, we know what the Warriors do, but the Cavs can hit this other gear. And all of a sudden, it was like, okay, the Warriors were also screwing around to some extent.
Totally. I think that matters a lot, and you have to be ready to score with them, and that's not easy. You have to make certain concessions when you do that, but if you can't even get a shot up, then you're in big trouble.
Yep.
So they're tough. As I was arguing with Matt Moore about kind of roster construction stuff, he was kind of pining for a more balanced, defensive focused roster. And I was like, listen, man, like any solution you have might sound nice, but the Warriors take that solution and create a new problem out of it. That's what makes them so good, is there isn't just this catch-all that says, oh, if we do this, we'll win.
Right.
No, you almost exclusively do not win, almost no matter what you do. So you have to try stuff, and you have to get a little wonky sometimes.
Because their best offensive players are also their best defensive players, and that's an issue.
Yep, they are probably the most talented team ever.
Yep, I would say so.
It's hard, but I think that I do have some hope that Thomas can figure it out, but there's anxiety there. There's no way around it. But at the same time, I think a lot of people thought Kyrie would never be able to make it work against them either.
Yeah, it's true. Absolutely.
So, and I think that Kyrie is a greater talent than Isaiah Thomas, but Thomas is a slightly more fully formed player than Kyrie. He's older.
Yeah.
So I think this season's just going to be fascinating. And we were talking
I'm glad
about
that we have so many things to kind of look forward to. Like, there's young guys to look forward to. There's a lot of questions.
There's new guys to look forward to. I was looking at our Fear the Sword sign-up sheet for, like, player previews, and I was like, oh, man, I've got, like, 9 dudes I've never written about before to talk about here. Which, if you've been on our staff for the past 3 years, doing these previews is brutal. Because, like, all right, I guess I'll write about JR again. Like,
but like, honestly, like, as much as I enjoyed Kyrie being on the team, I think if this team was just kind of ran back the way it was last season, I'd be way less optimistic than I am now. And I know it sounds pessimistic talking about the issues with Isaiah Thomas, but I really think even if they just stay as is, the Cavs would have a lot of options. Like, I'm assuming they're going to sign Dwayne Wade. I think they would be able to get away with a defensive lineup with Wade, JR, Crowder, LeBron, and Thompson, and then have Thomas and Love kind of playing in smaller roles, but still significant ones, where they play between 20 and 30 minutes, depending on how well they're performing. That's worked with Love in the past. And, I mean, the concept of an all-star tremendous player that's able to play well against 28 teams but is a poor matchup for one can't be a new concept for Cavs fans, because we have Kevin Love. So that's all I'm really saying with Isaiah Thomas. I don't think the Cavs are doomed. I think they're in a better position than they were last year. I'm a little terrified of the Warriors machine, but we'll see what happens.
Yep, I think that's fair. And if when this debacle started with Kyrie and the firing of Griff, like, I think we just wanted a roster to be intrigued by. If this is the way we were going to go out, we at least wanted some, like, how's this going to work? You know, we wanted to have some interest, and I think that we definitely are going to have that, and that this is going to be a fascinating season.
I completely agree. And that seems like a good place to wrap it up. So again, thank you to all our listeners. Remember that you can like, subscribe, leave a rating. It's the best way to support the show. We will continue to try to find things to talk about in the off season. We're really in the dead times right now, but luckily the Cavs seem to always provide us with something. So thanks again to all our listeners. And as always, go Cavs.